episode 78 of the MetroFan TV Rundown, coming to you live off a undefeated in regulation, I guess technically, span of five games since the hiring of the one they call Troy. But ladies and gentlemen, is this last game the fall of Troy? We should say, haha. That is what we're here to dissect, of course. A lot going on in the world of New York Red Bulls soccer, obviously. And a lot has transpired since we last put an episode to tape, shall we say. But along with me for the ride, as always, we've returning to regular programming, Juan Escalante. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Lenz. I didn't think I could feel this way a month ago, but here we are. Are you okay? Are you ready to talk about Red Bull soccer again, or should we talk about Bochy the Rock a little bit, ease you back into it?
You know what? To be honest with you, like we sublimated it, and I think the sheer vibes of that episode in typical Kitora fashion is what got Struber fired, because we invoked the powers that be to get the power of God and anime on this team's side once again. And we know that that's the most potent combination possible.
Wow.
But what did you have in mind?
I don't know. I'm thinking, is it possible for you to cast four players on the team as the four members of Kesoku Bando?
Oh, man. I mean, I think the Nijika figure right now is unquestionably Troy Lizane.
Okay.
And based on social media, I would probably say Corey Burke is Takeda. Some of those selfies have unquestionable like Kitora vibes. But the introverted character is where this gets a bit dicey, because I don't know if we necessarily have a Ryo, and we definitely do not have a Bochy type, I don't think. Last time I checked it, we have none of our players melting down on the field about about being out of sync with the rest of the team, or turning into, I don't know, glitch figures because they're asked to post something on social media.
Which player is going to be inside of a box, a mango box?
Most likely, can I put Dante Van Zier inside a mango box?
Yes, but you have to put an address to send him back to.
Yeah, no. I think in that sense, I would be like, please return to sender. Address unknown, who cares? Just discard if you can't find a sender. USC Saint-Gilloise, that's not even a real team, dude. The only time it was real was when Karo Bitomo was there. And now
exactly.
it's not real again. Like, Belgium's a fake country, dude. There is literally no reason for Belgium to exist. Okay, that I can think of. Like, literally invented. They have no parliament. Or they had no parliament, I should think. And, like, literally everyone who's been to Brussels, like, thinks it sucks. So we should just end it while we still can, if you ask me. President Xi, if you're listening to this podcast, please first nuke Belgium, and then we'll work from there. Okay. And that being said, I suppose we actually do have to talk about soccer this week, as I said at the top of the episode. And I kind of sound like, I'm going to apologize in advance for my voice sounding like about two pitches down than it usually does, because I want to go watch wrestling yesterday. I had a fun time hootering and hollering for Yukio Sakaguchi and Saki Akai. So a shout out to DDT Pro Wrestling. Shout out to Singapore Pro Wrestling. Shout out to Eruption. Rock over London. Rock on Chicago. It's always a fun time at the Graps. So anyway, on to this episode of the FBI Files. It's been a lot has transpired over the past few weeks, I think we should say. I think we put a bow on, well, I don't know if it was necessarily the outright worst period in club history, but I would definitely say like it was probably the most embarrassing like period in club history by some margin, right? I mean, like, I guess we have to address this at the top of the episode. You can take all kinds of embarrassing playoff defeats or, I don't know, mediocre seasons like 2009, but the one thing that those seasons didn't have was something on this scale, which was this completely
this completely bungled handling, as far as I'm concerned, of a rather serious incident involving one of our players admitting to using racial slurs on the pitch. I don't know how you can look at this from any angles and think that the team's handling of the situation was completely satisfactory. I think the communications were inconsistent. The tone was significantly off-putting to a lot of people. And even in the way that they've tried to, I think, reintegrate the offending player back in the team has been rather lacking in some areas, right? I mean, Dante Van Zier has still not addressed the fans. Mm-hmm. He has not addressed the communities that support this team, I should say, about his actions. Other than that one piece that he put out in the Belgian press that, I think, kind of had to go out of your way to go read. And B, I mean, like, obviously still it came off as sounding rather deflectionary in terms of tone, right? I mean, like, I don't know if I can 100% buy this idea that he was saying it to the referee when the referee was, like, literally, 10 feet away from him. And he was surrounded by, like, 3 specifically, like...
Right.
You know, 3 black players specifically. Like, I wasn't born yesterday. I'll put it that way. Like, that doesn't sit well with me at all, right? And it still doesn't sit well with me at all, right? I think anyone who thinks that, like, you know, just because Troy Lezane is, like, having this team win again, that everything is forgiven. Like, I want to unequivocally say at the top of this episode that no, not everything is forgiven. And on top of thinking that, and then on top of being a racist dickhead, he's also a shit football player. So he should probably fuck off, is my conclusion. Okay, now that we've gotten that out of the way about this Belch clown, let's talk about actually, like, fun things, I suppose. Troy Lezane, probably the main character in Red Bull New York right now, I should probably say, right? I mean, the former New Mexico United head coach has been given the unenviable task, I should say, of trying to get the vibes back. And in many ways, I think he has a more monumental task on his plate than Jesse Marsh did, right, when Petke got fired in 2014. And trying to, you know, repair that relationship with the fans on top of, getting the team, you know, back on track, right? And I think it's a pretty good leaping off point here, I think I would probably say, because, I don't remember the vibes being as fucked as they were towards the end of the Struber era, as much as they were since 2014, right? The acrimonious town hall, the general anger, I think, that was pervading throughout the fan base. But even then, in 2014, right? I mean, I think it wouldn't really go so far as to say that we had a fan base in outright complete revolt, even though they were definitely very vocally upset pockets of the fan base, right? But I don't know if it's necessarily going to be, like, on the scale that it was as a result of their handling of the whole Dante Van Zier racism incident. But so far, you know, I mean, as far as trying to accomplish the task that's been set out for him, I mean, I certainly think he's off to a pretty good start, right? I mean, I think even this stretch has kind of been beyond, I think, some of my more optimistic predictions. And really, my only expectation for every time an interim manager takes over, I suppose, is that they just kind of roll the ball out and gets the team, like, just playing decent, respectable football. And at that minimum, it's been met, I should probably say. And in some cases, even exceeded. I think there's a definite market difference in terms of a play style, I think, as you can see, between whatever the fuck Gerhard Schuber was trying to accomplish and now what Troy Lezane is getting this team to play with, while dealing with the same amounts of injuries and suspensions that Schuber had to deal with towards the end of his tenure. And it kind of makes you wonder, if we're grinding out like pretty comfortable looking wins shorthanded, the same amount of shorthanded personnel, right, against these bottom feeding teams in the East that we were previously losing to, right? Keyword here is losing to. And there's only been one major change since then. We kind of know what's going on here, right? I mean, I don't know what angles you could possibly take, right, to say otherwise. But so far, I would probably say he's done a pretty good job of what he's had. I mean, I don't necessarily think that we're going to be rocketing to like the top of the East all of a sudden, but we definitely had a sense that the manager was an active detriment to the team's performance on and off the pitch, right? And I think as far as the vibes go, right, there's certainly a bit of restored confidence, I would probably say, in some aspects of the team, perhaps. You know, and even in this last game against Cincinnati, I think we were definitely in it until the end, right? I think if it were, like, I'll put it this way, right? I mean, I think that there's been a pervading belief, I think, within all of these games, right, that we were going to score a goal of some kind, right? I mean, the chances are now coming in a bit more regularity. The team is actually carving out opportunities from open play as a result of, quick interchanges and, just very basic soccer stuff. Give and goes, overlaps, guys making diagonal runs to open up space inside the box. Like, all, like it would there be times where under Gerhard Schuber that they'd be looking like they're playing some kind of fucking alien, like, kick and run game, right? I don't even know. Like there'll be moments where they look like they're playing fucking Aussie rules, honestly speaking. Like, but it's markedly different now, right? I mean, you have phases that definitely resemble a more traditional, football buildup, right? You have guys who are actually actively recycling possession. And as a result of that specific change and that specific instruction change specifically, it's getting the best out of the skill sets, the likes of Daniel Edelman and Peter Stroud, right? I mean, one of the things that we definitely took away was, Edelman being a lot more suited for this recycling role, right? I mean, like, every pass he gets in the ball, he moves it. He gets in the ball, he moves it. And every single one of his passes is looking to progress the ball constructively, looking to break lines and, send the ball out to somebody streaking, hanging in a space. I mean, it's amazing how much better players can look, right, when the specific instruction to them is not hoof the ball, like, immediately as soon as you get it to, have the striker fight for, like, yet another 50-50 ball in the air just to artificially generate, like, pressing, artificially generate duels in the attacking third and push the pressing metrics up, right? I mean, I'd probably say that that's sort of been the big takeaway. I think you're definitely seeing a marked change in the philosophy, and that's not come at the expense specifically of the high press, right? I mean, if you compare the two, right, you can definitely say, like, in spite of the fact that players are allowed to kind of move out their are given a lot more liberties in the attacking zone now, right, in terms of positional play and interchangeability, that it has not necessarily compromised the structure of the press at all, right? I mean, in fact, it kind of looks like we're playing with proper triggers again, You could see that the way that the past few games, the front three or the front line basically are specifically looking to close down passing lanes once again while pressuring the man on the ball. And we specifically have triggers once again, right? When the ball's moved out to the touchline and everybody kind of funnels over, fans over to constrict the player to the touchline. I mean, I think this is all stuff that was practically non-existent by the time Struber decided to railroad himself out of here. You know, and I think in that sense, we're on the right track in terms of trying to restore in terms of trying to restore a place, I think, in the table, trying to restore a sense of, you know, pride in the team once again. And obviously, you know, I mean, I can't fully say that I'd be fully proud of everyone on the pitch because of, you know, certain fella who was named at the top of the episode. But I think I've spoken long enough. I think I should probably, you know, get some thoughts.
Take a breath.
Yeah. I think that was like a legitimate like 12-minute monologue.
I think so. I was doing the math there and I was like, wow, yeah. Lens is cooking for a long time. A lot of points there. I don't know where to begin. But I guess if I can, the general feeling for me is that vibes are back on the menu at Red Bull Arena. That's where we're at. I didn't expect the immediate turnaround from the second I showed up at the Open Cup game against DC at MSU Soccer Park. Even as like as cynical as I can be, when Troy Lesane walked over to the supporters before the game and saluted us, I was just like, oh my God, what a breath of fresh air this guy is. And I think to a wider point, that it feels like he's kind of, I don't say shouldering the responsibility of bringing the vibes back, but it feels that, because I would say that I agree with your point that the club has handled the situation with Von Seer and Struber generally horribly. And even their poor communication, their lack of communication around Von Seer has been a detriment towards being a fan. And it seems at times that Lesane, whether he's trying to or not, is, through his own statements, have been better than the club's. When they said that Von Seer came back to the team, that the teammates voted on the solution, blah blah blah. And I think with Troy, Troy was kind of implying that this was like not just the kind of thing where the team just like voted one day and then Dante came in and he was back in the team sheet, that he expressed that this was a whole process and that the players were involved. He had a really great bit about how Surgeon Goma talked about how this is an opportunity for him to educate someone as stupid as Von Seer. He didn't say that, but I would, he seems like a real dumbass, but which is commendable, you know, in the grand scheme of things. Should a, you know, I forget how old Surgeon Gomi is, but he's a young man. He should not be put into a position where he has to do that. But on the terms of the soccer, it's like, you know, before this episode, I was trying to look at the underlying numbers to see if things are looking better. And honestly, they have not, there isn't a market difference on paper between the team's performance outside of like goals scored, goals conceded. But if you watch these games, there is a marked difference to how this team is playing. The play seems to more on the front foot. It seems more natural. The all access video before the DC game, you had Troy just saying like, I want to see risk taking. I want to see, and you know, like, and the soccer we've been used to seeing with Gerhard Struber, as we joked, it's like perfect for a relegation scrap team where it's completely risk averse, right? Just totally not trying to leave any kind of impression in the game outside of like messing up, you know, trying to muck up the team's play through the press. It wasn't the press as a tool, but more the press as the point, the raison d'etre of going out there and playing soccer. Omir Fernandez's goal against DC is like, oh, a cross for like a diagonal run, a quick ball out to the wing, a cross into the box, and a first time finish. Like, where has this been for the past 3 years?
When's the last time we scored a tap in before that goal?
Oh my god. And it's, and like, you know, we're seeing it in just the general, like, it's this interesting situation for Lysane, because I think on one hand, I think he's built up enough goodwill with like the DC, the NYC games. You know, I was willing to take losses in either of those, because that's like, I'm starting from zero vibe wise, and I was willing to give him free hits to take losses there. But you see what he has, you know, the, he doesn't have the full squad, right? You said he has the absences. Yeah. He's working with virtually the same team that Struber is working with on a condensed schedule. And it's we're seeing the situation where like suddenly players who were like not performing at the beginning of the season, or at least showing some kind of like some kind of a resurgence in the way they're playing, not just, you know, we could talk about Peter Stroud, we could talk about, you know, some of the other guy, Omir, we could talk about, but like we could see some other players that were like underwhelming in early parts of the season, guys who were like in the wilderness, guys like Drew Yearwood, guys like John Tolkien, guys like Christian Cassidy Jr., guys like Cameron Harper, and suddenly it's like they're playing with their head up, they're playing with confidence, they're playing with there's less trepidation, and I feel like that's a symptom of not being shackled with being overcoached, overly coached, being overly hampered with tactics. And, you know, I've said it before that there were instances where, you know, the ball would circle out to the wing and then John Tolkien would just stand over the ball and nothing would happen. And I think we kind of credited that to like players not being instructed to move around him. But sometimes I think that the way that Struber set this team up was so dependent on how the opposition would play, and that it kind of forced us to have second, like, oh, you stand there with the ball, and like, it's because you're waiting to invite pressure. And if you don't invite pressure, there's no plan B after that. Wouldn't rather, we're seeing now at least, there's a more proactive approach, there's a more protagonistic approach to how this team approaches games. And again, this is still early, but good Lord.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, to your point, right? I mean, just taking the shackles off. Oh no! Oh dear! Oh man! Oh, sorry for that. As you can see,
oh man,
we went through a heavyweight clash, me and my vocal cords yesterday. but yeah, I mean, I think to your point, of course, obviously, I think taking the shackles off in itself can kind of go a long way, right? Because I mean, there has been a general sense that the team actually underperformed against their actual talent level last year, and the tactics had a big, you know, factor in that. And, you know, even just, I think now, getting a lot of these players to just kind of rely on their natural instincts and, you know, just let them cook a little bit in the attacking third. Right? What it basically boils down to is that Troy just kind of lets him say, just grill, right? Right. Attacking third.
Exactly.
It's already kind of yielding dividends, right? I mean, like, we named a whole bunch of players. I mean, I agree with generally all that. And I think the person that it embodies that the most, obviously, has been the recent, you know, emergence of Peter Stroud, right? Of people starting to really see, like, what he's really capable of doing. You know, the way that he is on the ball, right? How good he is at shielding, how good he is at, you know, breaking through the lines of, like, a really nice dribble here and there. And how tidy he is, right, in possession. I mean,
He is different gravy.
Yeah,
just on he reminds me of his brother Jared in the way that he's always, whenever he gets on the ball, it's always on the front foot, and he's always trying to make something happen. And of course, Jared is more of like an attacking midfielder winger, and Peter in this case is more of like a center midfielder box to box player. Some folks were saying that he reminds them of the ways in which he was able to move around the field and solving small problems. That's like very Dax McCarty of him. I think he gave me shades of like Sean Davis, and how like whenever he got the ball, it was out of his feet in one or two touches. A little bit different from Sean Davis, because I think he's a little more mobile, and I don't know how much of that was like Struber terrorism ball and how much of that was actually Sean Davis's ability. But it's just like with one or two touches, he's like out of danger. He's always popping up with something. So it's just these little touches that I'm just like, damn, this guy's good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think to your point, right, that kind of
That kind of play is only possible, right, if A, the players are allowed to retain the ball a little bit and play with it a little bit, and B, like, they're not, you know, rigidly instructed to stay in one set area at all times.
Right. Right?
And against compromising, I guess, the overall structure of a non-existent counter-pressing structure, if I'm being quite frank with you. Because even though, I guess, in the big picture, I suppose people could make the case where we were set up to be that way, but the actual individual pressing instructions in itself, like, had the whole thing fall apart, right? Because we used to be pressing, I guess, man-to-man under Struber, basically, right? Guys would just be chasing after the ball more often than not, and we wouldn't be attacking space, we wouldn't be attacking pressing lanes, we wouldn't be looking to compress space, basically, right? And that left a lot of cavernous space out there in the middle of the pitch. But the market difference between that and what we've seen on Troy Lezane is that, you know, there's been a sense of control, I think, in most of our games. The midfield battles especially are being won through a completely different way to when they were under Jesse Marsh, right? I think under Jesse Marsh, you saw a lot of, it's probably like the spatial game taken to its most logical extreme, right? And always looking when winning the ball back in terms of a, you know, really hard buzzsaw-like press that just continuously won the ball back in the attacking third. But under Troy, you know, it's a very markedly different style of play, right? A lot more retention, a lot more control over the game. It's not outright tiki-taka or Pep Guardiola nonsense before, like, anybody, like, jumps in that shit, right? But more of an ability to try and move the ball quickly between the lines, right? Through, I guess, just relying on fundamental tenets of attacking soccer, right? We talked about the overlaps earlier. One of the market differences, of course, is watching our fullbacks bomb down the sidelines again to create overlaps in space out there. One of the guys would be, you know, the quick interchanges that we saw, right? Especially in the run-up to a Corey Burke's goal against Montreal, right? And I think it was, yeah, right? You know, that kind of quick interplay that we saw, right? You recall the one in the build-up. Like that is completely non-existent under Gerhard Struber, right? And trying to say like nothing's fundamentally changed between the two is probably the most disingenuous argument you could probably make about how the team's been performing, because, yeah, like I said, where the fuck was that under Gerhard Struber, right? And it's not even something that's completely, like, antithetical to Red Bull Global Soccer, because you would see interchanges like that, let's say, like, you know, Salzburg or something back in the day, right, where there'd be a quick break, they have a quick, you know, quick interchange, two or three, four guys, it opens up a channel, and then it's a quick horizontal slide back in the center of the pitch to somebody, right, who just finishes off the move. And that's basically what we saw, right? I mean, you know, that last through ball, especially from Christian Caceres Jr., was like, I wasn't even aware that he was capable of playing through balls. I'll be honest with you. Like, again, right? Like, where the fuck was that under Gerhard Struber? Like, can someone pinpoint me a goal in the last, I don't know, like, couple years that we scored like that? I don't know. Like,
we tried multiple through balls in that game. There was one where in the second half that took everyone by surprise, including the intended target, Tom Barlow, because I think Drew Yearwood had slipped the ball a little too fast, but it was through the defender's legs. And I'm like, oh, look at all this.
That was so nice, right? It's like the Algo Lindo index is being revived. Lindo index. Shout out to those who know in the 2018 season, though. I mean, like, and now he's shitposting in Saudi Arabia. Like, you can take the guy out of Red Bull, but you can't take the Red Bull out of the guy. So, King Kaku, Sheikh Kaku,
Sheikh
please,
Kaku,
please buy our club. Use the Saudi money to buy Red Bull New York, please, Sheikh Kaku. But, you know, it's stuff like that, right? And I think it's stuff like that I think has definitely earned him a little bit of goodwill in my books. I definitely, he has earned the right, I think, for people to say that I want to see what Troy can cook when he has all, when he has all the players back.
Right.
Right. I think he's certainly earned the right to at least say that, you know, there is a possibility that we look different or what he can do, right? When he has all the, when he has all the weapons in his arsenal at his disposal, right? When Lewis Morgan comes back, when Frankie Amaya comes back, when I guess Lukinius is back now, had a rather had a game of contrasts, I would probably say, against Cincinnati, and is a quick cameo. Some other, and there's probably some other key players that like are totally missing my mind right now, but you basically know what I mean, right? Like, right. I'm keen on seeing like what he does with a full 11 at his disposal. He doesn't have to do like, you know, weird stuff like deploy a backline of what Sean Nealis, Hassan Ndam, and Dylan Nealis, or some
playing Omir Fernandez as a wingback,
playing Tom Barlow out wide, you know, stuff like that, right? Like
right.
Or yeah. So basically, and a quick A side there, right? And I think this is where I'm going to start to refer to the mailbag. Probably be a fun time to go from this A side, I think, obviously. I think there's a bunch of questions about the Coronel substitution from the last game against Cincinnati, God. And I think that'd be a fun one to go around. I mean,
let me tell you something. The vibe in the stadium, right? We're all, it's coming to the end of the thing, and then we're all just like, we have one sub left, because obviously we made five subs, but then you get an extra sub in added extra time. And then we see Coronel changing, and then we're like, what's going on? And then we're thinking, oh, is he going to make like a tactical sub, like the Louis van Gaal, Tim Krul sub in the world? Like, okay, we're going to penalty. Right, you bring in the penalty taker. And then, no, he's wearing an outfield jersey. And we're all like, are you seeing this shit? We're all just freaking out in the South Ward.
Yeah.
And it's not like the whistle blew. Like, we had a corner kick, and you see there's like photos of Coronel like jostling for position in the box.
It would have been so funny if he scored off of that.
If he scored, man, the Coronel like one outfield jersey would have been
next to BWP's 99 in the rafters.
And retire the jersey. That would have been one of the great moments. But apparently the reasoning was that Troy had said after the game that that he was going to take one of the that he actually would have been the sixth penalty taker had we gone into sudden death, which I hate FC Cincinnati for taking Hassan Ndam, for killing Harambe, and for preventing us from seeing that.
At least Haas came back, though. To be
at
fair.
Least Haas came back.
At least Haas came back, yeah. and he actually God. Looks good. He actually looks good nowadays.
Yeah,
you gotta say, like, shout out to Big Haas, like for real. But there was well, a
what
segue.
Kind of do you think he would have taken like a Kevin Pressman style penalty, just like absolutely walloping it, or would he have some sauce to him?
Oh, you know, I mean, like I'm in two minds about it, right? I mean, he's got a big booming kick. We all know that, right? We've seen him, but you know, I mean, like he's also got really good technique. So
yeah,
I don't know, maybe some kind of mix between like Rogerio Ceni and Previn Pressman specialty, which would make like all the football aggregator accounts is like the greatest penalty ever taken by a goalkeeper, because it's literally like a banana shot into like the top corner of the net.
That would be so sick.
Yeah. Like full power.
What's it called? Not to invoke their name. I think one thing that says about like Manchester City now is that everyone says that Ederson, the goalkeeper, is the best penalty kick taker on the team. And it is just more evidence of Pep Guardiola's football perversion that he has not let us see that.
Yeah, but, you know, that would involve having to watch Guardiola soccer of any kind.
Right, so, but, you know. That's... they should let... I don't know if he doesn't play for Brazil either, that much either.
Yeah, because Alisson is the number one, right? But, yeah, I was going to say, like, that was... I insisted that there was going to be a natural segue between, you know, what we were just talking about with the shorthandedness and, you know, this latest incident since the US
Open. Right, like he put it, like the sub was for Matt Noseda, who also just came on as a substitute for, Who did he come on for? For Reyes, I think. Yeah, Reyes had to come out.
Yeah. And I think, what, we had two goalkeepers on the bench this last game, if I'm not mistaken, I want to say. I can't recall. But basically, like, the fact that we were calling up Red Bull Academy randos to kind of, like, you know, fill out
the roster
spots, trying to tell you that, you know, I mean, like, this is still not a full-strength team by any means, and we're grinding out decent results against people. Like I said, you know, I mean...
And you know what? I think part of that, I think, as a wider thing, it's one of the things that Troy said, that like you get the sense that he sees like RB2 as like something to integrate further into the with the first team, that he's talked about, like he's always looking at the results of up and down the organization. And it feels like under Struber, like sending a first team player to RB2 felt like punishment. And now it's just like, right, now it's like, hey, like if you played sub minutes in on Saturday, you might play Sunday, just to, you know, get... We've seen that with Elias Manuel, who's like in and out. Ronald Doncor just scored for RB2. I don't know what.
Well, what's going on here? Like, what the fuck? Like, next you're gonna tell me that we've re-signed Yuba Diarra? Like,
right?
The like vibes are back in the menu.
Oh my gosh. But yes, you want to go to questions?
No, on an A side of that, like, how did we manage to fuck up a guy's entire nationality? Like, how did we fuck up that badly?
It's bizarre. Like, to be fair, I don't know if it's... I'm not being fair, but, like, obviously, like, the guy doesn't even have a Transfermarkt page, so it's actually quite difficult to get that kind of info.
Wouldn't you be able to, talk to his agent? Or, like,
yeah, that's very
strange.
Player
himself as, like, you know, the guys handling communications for the club,
yeah,
like, was
very
no
strange
one
that they said he was from Mali when he's actually Ghanaian,
from Ghana, right? Yeah, like,
yeah. there was a player on the German national team in the 2006 World Cup. His last name was Odonkor, so he's a German of Ghanaian descent. And I was thinking, like, wait a minute, sounds very similar.
As an aside, I suppose, yeah. Shout out to Gerald Asamoah as well, right?
Oh my gosh, Gerald Asamoah.
What a name, you know. He
Kevin Prince-Boateng.
Kevin Prince-Boateng. But Asamoah, that won Confederations Cup, was fucking unplayable, right? I thought that guy was the future for a while, but yeah, he just kind of never really amounted to much after that. But we'll always have the vibes. Remember Kakao as well. Like, remember all these random naturalized players.
What a weird time for German soccer, now you think about it.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
The late 2000s in Germany were a hell of a time.
Literally, like, didn't have a guy who can play as a striker. Yeah. So they had to naturalize a guy.
The guy's name was Mario Gomez.
Press the button.
But yeah, the question basically was Coronel 40 chess move. So thank you for the question, Poppy Pizza, that guy. And I think we kind of like inadvertently answered the question before, like, we read it. But yeah, you know, I mean, like, I don't know if it's really so much a 4D chess move as like some galaxy brain stuff that kind of had to be necessitated by, like, you know, like how shorthanded we are at this point in time, right? And I think the rationale makes sense, I suppose, because I guess we were coming up on the end of stoppage time, right? And we were going to end up taking penalties anyway, right?
Yeah, why not? I think if... So, what's it? We had another question from Amanda, who asked, what was the...
Oh, yeah, I have that one open. Please talk about weird goalie to field player lore, like Eddie Gavin's debut, what happened with Marcucci and Coronel being subbed as a field player, and if there's any other club in the world or similar happenings. And, you know, I got to say, right, like, it's sort of like position players pitching before, like, that became super, like, passé because of all this bullpen inning management bullshit that's going on in baseball right now. But it's always a special time, right? And the only other incident that I can think of is from yet another bygone Manchester City era vibe, right? When who was the manager? Was it Mark Hughes?
No, I have it. So it was... So I have the story. So...
He subbed on Mickey Weaver and David James went to go play striker. But
right, so it was Stuart Pearce, God, yeah, Stuart okay, Pearce yeah, managing Manchester City, and David James started in goal, and then he subbed on Nicky Weaver, and then moved David James to play as a striker. David James, who is like 6'4", and apparently they asked Stuart Pearce if it was premeditated, and he said yes, but it wasn't convincing, and I think his reasoning was that because it would just unsettle the opposition, and I guess it kind of did, because like, why is David James playing as a striker?
Yeah, he had a pretty decent chance fall to him as well, and I think he just completely scuffed it, if I'm not mistaken, from that game.
Right. Everyone had I don't think it's like, it's not a tip. The only other instance I can think, because it's more often the case that like the goalkeeper gets a red card and then an outfield player plays in goal. We have tens of them. Like, we have Brian like White, Brian we have Mike White, McGee. Yeah. Mike McGee. Kyle Walker did that for Manchester City once. Who's it? Can we think of another one?
John O'Shea.
John O'Shea for Man United.
Manchester United all the time, yeah.
There was who was it? It was for Ludogorets Razgrad in like Europa League. And they had this Cosmin Moti, who was a Romanian center back who went in goal. And he saved a few shots. And then he saved like two penalties in the penalty. Like he got a stand named after him. Absolute legend shit.
I know that Sheffield United and Everton used to not have a backup goalkeeper when Phil Hagielka was around because he was enough to actually serve as the emergency goalkeeper
in certain situations, yeah.
Which I have always thought was really, really quaint. And as yet another part of the legacy of someone who I have always kind of thought has been an extremely underrated Premier League era player in Phil Hagielka.
Oh, yeah. Like,
Jagielka, right?
I think it's Jagielka, but in Polish it's Jagielka.
I don't speak Pole, so.
And you lived with one for quite some time.
I pronounced it pierogies just to piss you off. Chris would basically have to act as the United Nations peacekeeping force. Shout out to Chris Cruz.
Right. right. I think the only other instance I think of like a goalkeeper like playing as a like Jorge Campos is like the example, like he literally would start games in goal and then like take off his shirt, his very flamboyant jerseys, and then play as a striker. But like he actually scored goals. Funnily enough, the only team he ever scored goals for, he played for a handful of teams, but he only ever scored goals for Pumas.
You know, and I will say, you know, like that's stuff from the bygone era that I kind of do miss, right, is when, you know, you'd allow the goalkeepers to kind of have a little bit more fun in the outfield. Like, one of the things I bemoan about modern soccer is the death of the free-kick-taking goalkeeper, right? Because we had three or four when I first started watching the sport, right? We had Chilavera from Paraguay. We had Jorge Campos, obviously, and then Rogerio Ceni came along. And even for a while, it kind of pervaded through most of the 2000s, right? Because you had guys like Hans-Jörg Butt, who took penalties and shit like that. You don't really have much of that anymore, right? I can't really remember the last time I've actually seen a goalkeeper like go up for a free kick.
There's one player, he plays for... Does he play for Sevilla now? Let me see. His name is Marko Dimitrovic. He currently plays for Sevilla, but when he was playing at Eibar, he used to take penalties for them. Or he scored once off a penalty from them. So there's that guy, Serbian goalkeeper.
So it's always a bald dude from like
these Balkan guys,
Balkans/Central Europe that always just kind of throw people for a fucking loop.
Yeah,
I respect that. Other weird goalkeeper lore. I mean, like
we did that when I was playing in high school. We had once where our main goalkeeper had hurt his hand, so he was like wearing a cast, but he would still go to games. And then like our coach would put him in midfield because like he was a handy player. It's not like he was totally useless when he wasn't playing in goal.
No, he could actually play with the ball out the back.
Exactly, he was playing 1-2s and everything. Wore Copa Mundials that didn't muck about.
I mean, Copa Mundials are the old reliables. Basically, if you're wearing Copas, you're like the best player in the pitch immediately in my eyes. Like, it means you don't fuck around. Anyone who's wearing like what fucking Air Tiempos, like get the fuck off the pitch. Like, you're
I will 2-foot you in the ass.
Especially if like they're the super colorful ones as well. Like,
right.
Yeah, I'm going to try to think about what other weird goalkeeper lore we had. I mean, this is all that really comes to mind right now, but that is a really fun prompt that I'm probably going to have to dig around a little bit. I'm sure there's a few apocryphal stories that I don't even know if I'm using that word right, to be honest with you. I'm very tired right now. But I'm sure there's a few other stories that we've forgotten. So I guess if you've gotten to this point in the episode and there are other weird goalkeeping stories that you want to share, like, you know, feel free to, like, just, I don't know, let us know in the comments of when this episode goes out. And let's just recount some great goalkeeping lore, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I could probably talk all day about this subject, but...
We are one of the few teams in the league that has a goalkeeper actually score a goal. Shout out to Danny Sapero.
Yeah, that is true. No, that is true. And then, I guess we'll put a bow on it by talking about, like, the thing that kind of prompted it, right, which was the Eddie Gaven incident. And I think as will be recounted in various corners of the internet, like, back in the day, you had a fourth substitution for, I think, what? There was a rule that allowed a fourth substitution, basically.
For a goalkeeper, right? I think.
For a goalkeeper, yeah. So... Bob Bradley, as the MetroStars coach, kind of abused it as a bit of a loophole to get another attacking player on the pitch. And in order to do that, I think it was Tim Howard, right? Go up.
he had Tim Howard in goal and then Mark Lisi, and then he subbed Gaven into goal for Lisi after Lisi was put in goal.
Yeah. And then he had Eddie Gaven, like, switch again from goalkeeper to striker, and he ended up scoring the winning goal in that match, if I'm not mistaken. So that was a pretty wild time. Early years of MLS, just a completely unserious league. But, you know, I guess that's why we're here. They were different vibes, basically.
Yes.
Back then, it was
Wild West.
It was. Imagine semi-pro, right? Like the movie Semi-Pro, but it's like every game. Like those are the vibes that I get, basically. And now Bob Bradley's being roasted by Fernando Bernardeschi at Toronto FC. Just imagine, like, it just kind of tells you about, like, the mindset that this guy's in, that he just wants to vape into life. He just can't stop vaping. In the locker room, in training, on the team bus, maybe in the airplane if he's feeling cheeky. Like, then when he's called out about it, he's like, yeah, it's because you're the coach's dad. Shut the fuck up. Like,
you're his son. You're his other son. At what point do you just stop? Like, everyone's like, everyone is his son. You're his son, too. You're his son.
And Andy, you just can't point at people and call him Bob Bradley's son. You're Bob Bradley's son.
You there. You're Bob Bradley's son.
And I love the best detail is that, like, when Bob tries to step in as well, it's like, yeah, of course you're going to say that. You're his papa. I take back everything bad I ever said about that transfer. I think it's the best transfer in MLS history now, like, unironically. Like,
Bernardeschi, I said, like, he looks like evil Mike Grella, and he might actually be evil Mike Grella.
Yeah, you see, I think it's unfortunate conclusive proof that growing up in Long Island has you geared towards the chaotic good part of the scale, because Bernardeschi is unquestionably chaotic evil,
right? Yes.
And he's got full Italian blood, so yeah, Long Island chaotic good. He moved there from Fiorentina, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was at Fiorentina, then he went to Juventus, and then he went to Toronto.
Oh, okay. Which, I mean,
he compounds the evilness. Yeah.
He became from Juventus. He's unquestionably evil. Like,
yes. Imagine the kind of fraud that Juventus had to pull to sign him from Fiore.
What's even funny is they got busted again recently for cheating.
They got a 15-point deduction, had the points reinstated, and then 10 went back.
10 went back. Yeah. I mean, what an absolutely shambolic team. Calciopoli didn't teach them anything. And I've said this many times that we're only on the timeline right now because they didn't stay down in Serie B after Calciopoli.
Exactly.
But this has been a very long tangent.
I guess we'll circle back real fast to the recent team performance. But to be honest, I mean, I don't really think that much else is really actually really. I don't really think that there's nothing anything else that really comes to mind.
No, right, yeah, I think we're at this point where we have these games coming up against Seattle, Miami away, Orlando at home, Charlotte at home, and you know, slowly but surely, the players are going to come back into the team. We still haven't seen Lewis Morgan. We just saw Lucchenius back with the team. We're looking at. I mean, Kyle Duncan will be back if at some point. Who knows if that's going to be a thing? I don't know. Who else is missing on the team? Who else is?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, like the way he's played so far this season, like, I mean, I'm kind of whatever about that. I mean,
right.
I think bringing
Frankie Amaya.
Frankie Amaya, yeah.
Frankie Amaya
will be a pretty big shot in the arm to the midfield, but.
Yeah,
you know, I think with regards to Kyle Duncan, I mean, like he was, and I mean, like he's not really a solution to a problem that we had.
No, we can go back to that. We're finally seeing paying dividends with the younger Nealis and one Cameron Harper.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like I got to say, right? I mean, like there's a reason why this guy wasn't playing in Belgium, and like we kind of know the. Standard of play in Belgium at this point, it's shit, right?
If Dante Vanceer is scoring buckets of goals, how good are these defenders?
Yeah, seriously.
These goals the goals he was scoring there, they could not have always been volleys. As far as I know, he's only capable of scoring balls out of the air.
Yeah, I mean, like, you ask him to do anything on the ball, and he, like, bungles it immediately. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
The movement looks deep.
I'm just like... But the off-ball movement looks good, but sometimes when he's on the ball, you're like, what's this guy's deal?
It's like, played football before? Like,
it's just like, I try not to think about him too much, and it's like the whole, it's like, he's back with the team, whatever, who cares? But at a certain point, like, we paid a lot of money for him, and like, I'm not convinced watching this guy play. Like, he's not the record transfer. I think he would have been, had not been for like, the negotiating. But he's about the same amount of money we paid for Kaku. And Kaku took like two or three games where we were like, hello, this guy's a fucking baller.
It was immediate in some cases. I mean, you got to remember, he literally came off the bench against Tijuana and he scored.
And he scored.
Almost immediately in his first game. Like, he was contributing from the go. Then right. He basically like played Portland off the pitch in his next game.
His like, first still, pass, his first
very,
touch in
to
Major
ben
League Soccer
Mines,
was a nutmeg.
Nutmeg pass to find Ben Mines at the far post. Ben Mines! Fucking 17-year-old Ben Mines!
Like, he was born after 9-11. Or, not, he was born in he was born in 2001, though. But that's half the team now, so.
Yeah, that's not really special anymore, to be honest with you. When you had, like, weirdos talking about, like, fucking class of 2008 players. Who was that kid who ended up going to like Dortmund that like all the pedos were like fucking losing their minds over? What's his name again?
I don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't think we should know this information. Anyway, to be
I
honest.
I don't
want to
be
you.
Put on a watch list.
Exactly. We're not going to steer into that. Anyway, yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing, man. I mean, like I said at the top of the episode, I mean, like, even if you take away, like, all the racism stuff, and, you know, we really shouldn't be taking away from the racism stuff at all.
No,
I mean,
we like, should not.
This guy is not a player, man. Like,
I'm not seeing
paid,
it. I am not
convinced. We paid $5 million for, like, an even more useless version of Danny Royer. I am pretty much convinced at this point. And we would have probably been better served actually bringing back Danny Royer, if that's the case.
It certainly does not help his case. If he was a nice lad, I would probably feel much differently about
yeah,
him. But
exactly.
The amount of hype this guy got from this sighting after showing highlights of him scoring tap-ins again. Okay, I'm getting mad about Dante Vanceer for the wrong reasons, and not even for the right reasons, is that he's a dumbass fuckboy.
Yeah, no, he's a fuckboy. He can't trap a ball to save his life. I don't know, man. Like,
he showed, they did the pregame fits and he showed up wearing all black and wearing a black turtleneck. I'm like, this is not how you avoid looking like an evil guy.
These were the guys who were dissing the Jamaica bobsled team in Cool Runnings, you know.
Oh, like, my God.
You are a joke, Jamaica! And then Corey Burke's like, the fuck you say? He's like, he scored. this is the sequel to Cool Runnings we were all waiting for, where Corey Burke is the protagonist. I'd be so fucking down for that, to be honest with you. Like, that'd be so
I feel like the actual version, the sequel to Cool Runnings would be like Usain Bolt becoming a professional soccer player just because he's fast. And I'm like, we've seen this in real life.
He had that trial with that Australian team, didn't he?
Central Coast Mariners, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, the A-League is not real. I'm sorry. No. Sorry to report that the A-League is not real.
If you ever watch the A-League and like see what the vibe is, it's basically, imagine if MLS 2.0 never ended, and that's kind of what the vibe is over there.
Yeah. No, it's a perfect time capsule. it's a time capsule. It's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You even have a proper throwback shit house in Bessart Berisha who you can get behind.
Yes.
Like, exactly. Classic football. But yeah, I mean, okay, I think we talked about that fucking clown too much, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know if like I could ever really justify, I don't know, ever bringing him in at this point. Like, he had to probably, like, I don't know. I mean, no amounts of goals in the world was gonna, I don't know, make me forgive the guy. But on top of that, he's just he's shit. Like an absolute travesty. I mean, like, so basically, the fullback we brought in didn't really address the situation that we had at fullback. The new DP is a cunt. And let's see. I think with the summer window opening up, I mean, I do think that we definitely have some room for improvement, naturally. I do think we probably need to reinforce the back line a little bit more. Especially since it looks like, you know, Andres Reyes, you know, he gets hurt almost every other game, and I hold my breath. Like, it's a cardiac moment almost every other game. Mm-hmm. Because we should not be, as good as he is, I think it's a sign that there are issues remaining with the team that we are awaiting with bated breath every time, like, one of our center backs goes down, right? But I will say, Hassan Ndam has stepped up in a really big way this year, right? And I think his stock has low-key risen quite a lot, I would probably say, right? I mean, I think I was honestly a bit skeptical when he brought him back, but I will say, you know, he looks like a pretty... He looks like a player out there, right? I think the way that he uses his body and jockeying for the ball, I mean, it's been very promising, I should say, what we've seen from him. And I think he's definitely made a case where, you know, he's serviceable enough at the third center back position that, you know, I think it gives a little bit of assurance if we need to go three in the back, you know. So right. I guess Reyes, Nealis, Ndam, that's a pretty decent look, I think. And then the question then becomes, you know, it's always about depth and what happens after that, right? And, you know, I mean, we haven't seen enough of Matt Nocita to really have a conclusion about him. Dylan Nealis, you know, still a bit hit or miss, but less misses nowadays and a few more hits, I think, under his belt. And then I think, I think we'd probably be served well to at least get one more defender to reinforce that back line. And if we have an out-and-out proper solution at right back, that's not re-signing Kyle Duncan again. That would be, that'd be gravy. Like someone, like, you know, especially in this team, it would be really cool if we signed someone who, like, one of those very traditional, like, attacking fullbacks. You know what I mean? Like, remember when we were in for Iago Pikachu?
Oh, yeah.
And he actually plays in Japan now, if I'm not mistaken. So,
right, doesn't he?
I forget which team.
Albirex Niigata. I'm just going to take a guess.
It was one of the lower division ones, if I'm not mistaken.
He plays for Shimizu S-Pol, so I was Right color, but wrong team.
Yeah. Similar to that, you know. I mean, I think that'd probably be something that I want to do. And then, well, when it comes to strikers, I mean, I imagine we're going to see Lewis Morgan get trotted out there at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't seen Troy Lassane settle into one look that hasn't been, like, necessitated by the absences in the squad. I know that we've rolled out a 3-4-2-1 or a 3-5-2 against DC with Omir as that left wing back and John Tolkien as that left center back. But it's kind of been fluid. When we played against New York City FC, we started out in that formation and then we quickly went to a 4-back line like within like 5 minutes. So, but I think as far as I know, I think Troy might have done the 3-5-2 when he was at New Mexico. So that might be something that he'd be interested in keep doing and not as like an offshoot of whatever Gerhard Struve was running. So it's to be seen.
Yeah, a lot of it really is TBC, right? I mean, I think I'm going to prevent drawing too much conclusions until I see what we look like at full strength. But even at this point of how it's transpired, I do think we should probably shore up the defensive depth a little bit. We do need a central attacking midfielder as well, I think. Because as good as the link-up and ball progression has been going, I still don't know if we have a creative force in the attacking third.
Maybe. Still, I think we've been trying out Drew Yearwood, which has been an interesting look.
Yeah, we haven't touched upon that games. At all, huh? Yeah, we should probably talk about that.
I think with Drew Yearwood, it's been very interesting because we basically brought him as a center midfielder. He has a very good, you know, he's got a good ball in him. You know, within his first game, he's like shifting those balls really quickly out to the wings. But I think what we've noticed, because how do I describe this? He's very good at driving with the ball. He's actually quite a silky dribbler, which we didn't realize when we signed him. And he has very powerful runs. And then he can actually deliver a ball in the final third. They've been off, but I think that's sort of been the idea. Like against DC, he was basically playing as the furthest midfielder.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was exactly as an attacking midfielder if he was supposed to play as a second striker, but he was definitely the furthest midfielder, at times in the same line as Tom Barlow. But we're seeing that rather than him playing in the double pivot, most of the time Troy has been deploying him in a more advanced role. I did think he did play within the two against Cincinnati, but it's interesting to see that he's been the first option to play in that advanced spot more than like Christian Cáceres has been for the past couple of years.
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting comparison to bring up, right? And I think the first part, especially where you talk about how much better he is, like when he's playing a bit deeper initially, right? I think I still think his biggest asset as a player is obviously that ability to drive from deep positions, right? And I think the types of balls that he sends in is better served when he's driving it at the opposition at full speed and then kind of, you know, rakes a pass, you know, from a deeper area into someone streaking into a channel ahead of him. Because I think it's a very different skill set that's required, I think, for someone playing a little bit more advanced, right? You have to be a bit better in tight spaces and you have to be... And it's about having a quicker release, right? Quicker release at a bunch of very tight angles as well, because, you know, there's just simply not a lot of space to operate with in and around the 18-yard box, right? And that's, I think, what made Kaku so good, right? Is that, like, he'd turn and immediately the ball would be, like, go, right? Ball would immediately, like, be off his feet. It'd be, like, bang, right? Turn, bang, ball into space, right? I don't really know if we have anyone on the team right now who has that. I think in terms of the ability to turn in tight spaces, like Wickelman Carmona is there, but the passing and the vision...
The passing is not quite there. But the
passing is not quite there, yeah.
Yeah, but now that we finally have guys running into space, making those late runs, it's there's the utility there.
We could be getting somewhere basically with that. Mm-hmm. And I think to go back to Yearwood specifically, I mean, I think, yeah, it's true that, you know, he's very good when he's on the ball at full flight. But, you know, I think the ability to turn in his case, don't really see it yet. I mean, he could have it. But then it's also the question of, like, the ability to, like, you know, ping that kind of, you know, really tight pass in a really tight space. Mm-hmm. I think, like you said, like, he's shown flashes of it. It's just that I think he's shown flashes of it, and I think especially against Montreal, right? I think it was probably one of his best. Was it against Montreal or was it against Toronto? I can't remember which game it was where I really kind of saw that it was kind of kicking off. I think it was Montreal, right?
He was very active against Montreal.
He was very active against Montreal, yeah, where I thought, you know, it was definitely progressing in the right direction. So, one of those things that I think remains to be seen, the part where he starts, like, basically way up high, I think is probably an attempt to try and, you know, channel a lot of that motor, right? Try and, you know, press opposition defenders, like,
yes,
aggressively. It's like a kind of a weird variation of when Tyler Adams was being deployed as, like, an advanced destroyer at points under Jesse Marsh. But obviously, I don't know if, like, it's necessarily the best use of his talents to be set that high, because I think the offset would obviously be what you gain in, you know, what you gain in the press, you kind of lose in the attacking third, right? Because again, yeah, I think he's not really the best in tight spaces. It was, mm-hmm, especially with his back turned against the back line, right? It was a bit hard for him to kind of leave a bit of an imprint in the game when he was, you know, it was back against the goal. In a perfect world, I would probably say that he ends up in a slightly deeper in the line, and I would like to see Troy try and, you know, deploy him there next to, say, I don't know, Daniel Edelman or Peter Stroud, but I think we haven't quite been able to see that pay off yet. Another person that we've seen, like, shoehorn into that would be Christian Caceres Jr., and I really don't know, like, what to make of him as a player at this point. Like,
it's very strange, and we've been seeing it's been hot and cold these past few games, but I do think he will definitely benefit not having to be over hampered by overwrought tactics at whatever Struber was running.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a freedom to his game under Troy that I think will be helpful. Because I think also with Gossett, there's a bit of an edge to him that sometimes is very useful. Like the penalty he scored against Cincinnati was pretty banging. He just roofed it. And yeah, I'm like, you know, you need a guy like that.
Yeah, that was sick. Might lose him on a free transfer, apparently, because his deal's up at the end of the year.
Man.
We were supposed to sell him to Russia, but, you know.
Well, some shit was going down.
Yeah, you know, the fax machine broke down.
That's one way of saying it, yes.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I don't really know what else to say other than that. Like, I still don't. It's been 4 years, and I don't know what to make of him as a player. Like, it's weird because, like, he does the strengths and attributes, the strengths and weaknesses that he has as a player add up to create a very weird player who doesn't necessarily have a weak position, but also doesn't necessarily have a strong position.
Right.
You know what I mean, right? Like, he's good at shielding the ball, but he's kind of slow, right? He has a pass on him, but his vision's not great, and his technique is, you know, is all right, I guess. He's good at he's got a decent shot from distance, but, like, he doesn't make the right decisions. He doesn't make the best decisions all the time.
Right.
On determining whether to pass or shoot. And I don't know, he's not dynamic enough to, like, draw, you know, attackers to him with his on-ball ability, but he is certainly very good at, like, shielding the ball from unrushing attackers, like I said. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I don't know where his best position is.
I think he's still the last New York Red Bulls player to have scored off a free kick.
He is, yeah. No. And that was like 2 years ago at this point again, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I don't know, man. He's not a six. He's not an eight. He's not a 10. But he can play somewhere in the middle of all that. Like,
exactly. He's a fractional player.
Yeah, he's a what's 6 plus 8 plus 10 divided by 3? it actually is 8. Oh, God. So yeah, never mind. We're not really going anywhere with that. Sorry. I got foiled by math again.
Damn.
Fucking hell, right? Like, but anyway, I don't know. I don't really think I have much else to add about recent games. So we had a couple questions about this, obviously, from Derek, who says, football was fun. What are your thoughts in recent games? I want to hear. Which is, of course, a reference to the original Japanese from AI Absolute Japanese Girlfriend. This is proof that anime attracts a lot of unranted attention.
Yes.
Football tanoshikatta. Saikin no game no saisho senso mitemitai. I have just told you everything that I think was a tanoshikatta about a recent shi. So I don't know. I want to become a constellation with Troy Lozane, basically. Troy Lozane, Kimito Atsumate, Sezani Naretara. Do you want to shout out anyone? Should we just do a quick stock check to kind of get out this segment where we actually talk? Yeah.
I think all the players we've mentioned, I will say that John Tolkien's socks are at are high up in his legs, and I think that he wore them so low to reflect the morale in the team, and now that they're back to normal levels, I think that's indicative of something.
I think that could be the new index, huh? the optimism index is actually like indicated by his
John
socks.
Tolkien's socks.
I will say though, you know, I mean, like he's another person who's kind of benefited from this recent instructional change, though, right? I mean, I think especially of his ability to like actually play the ball forward nowadays.
Yeah,
I think that's sort of been something that we've haven't touched upon too much. And actually, you know, in terms of the overall structure, he's actually like the main creative force for the team right now. Which is kind of like, what the fuck is going on, guys? But he's turned into Ashito Aoi, basically. Like, congratulations, John. Like, yeah. So, yeah, bringing back all the anime hits here. Hopefully that this is what you came to see. This is what you want.
This is what the people asked for.
The people asked for. I was surprised at the amount of people who actually listened to that episode. To be honest with you, I was like, is anyone actually going to want to hear like three washed ass like late millennials talk about anime? And the answer is apparently yes.
Turns out yes.
Yeah, this is the power of Bocchi the Rock, ladies and gentlemen. Kimito Atsumate Sezani Naretara. It's going to be my new. It's going to be my new battle cry.
We're going to make a two poll of it.
Yeah, Metro to Atsumate Sezani Naretara. Because Metro Stars, Constellation. You know.
There we go.
Hey. Paint the TIFO, kids. Who do I have to submit this idea to?
You know the proper channels.
Yeah, I do, but I'm too lazy to. I can't draw. And also, I'm too lazy.
All right.
I do. Okay. So, yeah. So, stocks for me. I'll give ups to Stroud, Edelman. I'll give ups to Stroud, Edelman, Dom. No one else I think I can really think of. I do think that Corey Burke is, like, the best striker in our pool still, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
you can tell like how much the offense dies when like he's not in there to like actually hold the ball up in the attacking third. Like, a lot of these offensive signings that we made in the offseason are not ready for prime time. And it's a shame because some of them are actually in their prime. So I will give stock downs to Elias Manuel, to Dante Van Zier. I will give like 10 stock downs to Dante Van Zier, actually. Like, I'm going to give so many stock downs. Like, he's going to look like Credit Suisse stock, basically, at this point.
Oh my gosh.
Like,
it's going to go down like whatever Forex, foreign exchange index he's interested in. I don't know.
Dude, he's definitely a Bitcoin guy.
Oh my god.
You can see it on his fucking face. Like, he's definitely a Bitcoin guy. He just dredged
up. He definitely, like, pitched NFTs to Union Saint-Gilloise. And the owner is like, look, I'm a gambler, but not even I'm doing that. I made my money off gambling, but even then, I'm not too stupid to go into NFTs.
I was going to say, like, that was a sigh that could only be dredged from someone who is more than familiar with the types of people that patronize South Florida exactly. And the Miami-Dade metro area. You know, like, climate change is certainly sad, but I wouldn't be sad to see Miami go as part of it. You know, in fact, I think in that sense, like, climate change is a net win, but that's the only positive that I can think of.
You gotta give it back to the orcas.
Yeah, finally free the orcas from SeaWorld. Like, what the fuck, man? Seriously? Exactly. Like, oh, dear. Shout out to SeaWorld. Fuck you. Fuck SeaWorld. Anyone who's still yelling, fuck Trae Young in, like, 2023, like, can you change that energy to fuck SeaWorld, please? Thank you. Good night. Like, yeah, I mean, I think that kind of about does it for me. We do have a few questions that we haven't gotten to.
Oh, okay, nice. Let's knock those out.
I guess we only have one, actually, and that's
all from right, our let's friend, do it.
Profe Mapu. Well, Profe scored a hat trick the other day. Is he better than Van Zier? Unquestionably.
As long as the team you play for did not pay $5 million for you, you have a better return on investment. So, yes. Also, I'm assuming he's not saying any slurs on the field.
I mean, I know Profe. He's a good guy. So, absolutely yes. No way. Right? Profe will never let us down like that.
Exactly.
I'm fairly certain. So, like, yeah. I think unquestionably, if we signed Profe Mapu and haven't coached for a few years under Troy Lezane, I think he might end up actually turning into the second coming of Falcao. So no, I think no question. Profe Mapu, I'm telling you, get in there, son. You might as well, for heaven's sake.
Exactly.
Favorite pickup moment, I suppose, is what we'd kind of pivot this to, is like a nice little bow in the episode, right? Favorite pickup episode, because I think we have been playing quite a lot recently. ASC GeoGuessr, shout out to ASC GeoGuessr, I guess. The campaign's kicking off soon, hopefully.
Yes, our next season kicking off in 2 weeks. So
up the geos, man.
The geos.
A lot of scrutiny right now on an interim on a Alex Peaches Chang going into this season. But you know, I think this is Peaches's time to shine, right? I mean, once Ballyhood is probably the most you know, up and coming managerial prospect the side of Eddie Howe, right? And I think the people are going to want to see like what he can do, right, with a full season in charge. So fairly interesting time for the geos. Obviously, I think team captain Patrick Haddad, real tent pole for the fan base, you know, trying to rally the troops right now. So everybody get down behind the geos, up the geos. Favorite pickup moment recently. I had a couple pretty banging saves, I guess. I was pretty happy about that. Nice. it was like going right into the corner, like with like a defender in front of me. I just stuck a hand out and happened to hit it. And like, immediately I knew it was probably a really good save because everyone in the pitch was like, oh,
oh, damn.
It was so satisfying. I'm not going to lie. It was like ASMR right there. Like,
right.
Let me tell you.
Is there one for me? Oh, I was playing pickup last week and I got on the ball. I was one-on-one with the defender and, You know, those moments where you're like, you're not thinking about it and you just do it automatically. I just go one step over to my right, cut to my left, finish at the far post. And I'm like, damn, I really did that.
No, you turn into a, next year you're going to try and do a Trivella. So we can turn you into a Ricardo Juarezma.
Exactly.
Juan Resma. Juarezma. I think it's Juarezma. Right? Juarezma. Because like Juarezma.
Juarezma.
Juarezma. When he actually scored the Trivella in 2018, though, that's when like I think we realized that, you know, I think football has kind of come full circle. We can close the book in Portugal now.
Yes.
Like, the story's done. It wasn't when they won Euro 2016. Like, get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. It was when Quaresma scored the Trivella in 2018. Like, I want to say it was like after years and years of trying, but I don't even know if that's true, to be honest with you.
I want to believe he hasn't really. I mean, clearly he's never scored like that at a World Cup. I don't think he even scored like that at a Euro. So,
or even in like any Champions League games that I remember him playing back in the day.
Ooh,
to be honest,
maybe.
I don't know, but you're going to have to dig deep in the archives there. So probably have to dig into like Barbosa football videos after this.
Oh my gosh.
To to see if Quaresma has truly scored a Trivella recently. I don't know. I don't know when this episode's going to be out, by the way, because of Zencaster's like stupid ass new rules. So fuck you, Zencaster.
Well, I mean, this episode's at an hour 20. So should we want to record, we'll only have 40 minutes to record if we want to record later this month.
I mean, I think we should be able to. We should be able to. We should be able to handle something in 40 minutes, I suppose. Shout out to Spotify and like your terrible monetization policies. I think shout out to Zencaster for being a serviceable yet rather mediocre service that allows us to record a podcast remotely. Big stock down to Spotify. You know, it was bad ever since they started sponsoring Barcelona, but yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't know when this episode's gonna be out, but just to put a mark on it, upcoming game is against Seattle. West Coast trip. I haven't played in Seattle since 2019.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
This league is so stupid.
When we started expanding from like the draft, from the craft beer like cities to like the axe throwing cities, like that's when you knew it was over.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. Like, so, yeah. So Seattle, I think, tomorrow, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that game kicks off at, let me try, 10:30 a.m. my time.
Yep.
So, yeah,
yep.
late coast, West Coast games means late start time. So, yeah, there you go. Seattle Sounders, 10:30 Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Singapore Standard Time as well. And then after that, we have another midweek clash against Inter Miami, 1st of June.
Phil Neville's in Miami.
Yeah, and then before, I think it appears like we have an international break for most of June, right? So there's a hiatus between the 4th of June and 22nd of June. So we go into Orlando City at Red Bull Arena on Sunday at 7:30. Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday my time, 7:30 a.m. Before we go into a week break. So hopefully we'll be able to pick up a few points by that. I especially want to bin Inter Miami. Like, guys, they're not good. Like, West Coast away trips, especially to a team as strong as Seattle, I'm like, kind of whatever, to be honest with you.
I don't even
like,
know how good Seattle is, because I can't watch any MLS recently, so it's like... It's
second in the West, 14 games played.
All right.
They have to be all right, I guess. I haven't really been following too much. They have lost two on the bounce, though. Against Austin and Vancouver.
Wow.
So that's the lay of the land. Make of that of what you will. I think you have to remind yourselves, in spite of everything, we're still only 3 points out of a playoff spot, right? Wow. Because the way that qualification works in this league is stupid, where like it's literally like harder to miss the playoffs than it is to make it. So, like... Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see what happens from here. Like,
as far as we're concerned, we're playing with house money. So do you have a parting shot you'd like to give off for this week's episode, or are you happy just kind of content ending it there?
I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we're good. I think we're good. Seattle is a lovely place, though. Some of the best fish I've ever eaten in my life was in Seattle.
Wow.
Yeah. That's all I really got to say. So, yeah, thanks. Thank you so much, Juan, for your time as always.
Of course.
This was episode 78 of Metro Fan TV. If you haven't watched Bochy the Rock yet, fuck you. Go watch it now.
We're going to play football. We're gonna play